Hi, this is Craig Ballantyne, host of Early to Rise Radio. Have you ever wanted to become wealthier, healthier, wiser, or just have more time to appreciate the finer things in life? On this show, we reveal what high performers are doing every day to be more successful without sacrificing their personal lives. Early to Rise Radio is sponsored by the Perfect Day Formula. Get your free copy of this game-changing success guide at freeperfectdaybook.com. Now let's get started with today's show. Dr. Lyon, are you ready to like go through my medical history?
I'm ready.
All right, let's do this. Dr. Lyon, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I am so excited. This is going to be a really, really great deep dive into both the mindset and the nutrition and the energy practices of high performers. So this is definitely super exciting for me because I'm almost going to get like a little coaching session here from you on what to do just to make myself even better. But why don't you just tell my listeners a little bit about yourself? You are a functional medicine doctor, and how the heck did you get down this road?
Yeah, with pleasure. So obviously my name is Dr. Gabrielle Lyon, and I
practice with no S.
No S. Everybody says S. No S. And I founded a new branch of medicine called muscle-centric medicine. And this is the concept that muscle, skeletal muscle, is the organ of longevity. It truly is an endocrine organ. We focus so much on adiposity, and you've seen it, right? I'm sure people that you coach talk about, you know, just can't lose the weight, or they really struggle. Maybe they're really excellent in business, but struggle with their weight. The problem is we've constantly been focused on adiposity and being overweight. That's just symptomology of impaired muscle. So I've developed in part some of these protocols and concepts around medicine. And it's been quite a long road. I graduated high school early and moved in with my godmother, who happened to be a PhD in nutritional sciences.
Oh.
So from 17 years old, I started down this path.
Now, what did you think that you were going to get into? Like when you started down that path, did you think that you would be a nutritionist at this level, or did you think that you were going to go into cancer research, or what?
No, I actually did. And I think that was very fortunate. I had incredible and do have incredible mentors. So at 17, I knew exactly that I was going to do nutrition. Then, you know, I went to my undergraduate, which we were talking about offline, at University of Illinois. And I studied human nutrition, vitamin mineral metabolism there under one of your very good friends' friends. So Stu Phillips is very good friends with Dr. Donald Lehman, who's a world-leading protein expert. Mm-hmm. And I studied under him and have been mentored by him for the last 20 years.
Very cool.
It's a really long time. It's a lot of schooling.
Yeah, exactly. So going back even further, when you were a little girl, what did you want to be?
I always love asking this question.
A marine biologist?
Yes, yeah.
Very nice. And so what deterred you from that?
You know, I think that at a very fundamental level, there's certain kind of attributes that we all have. And one of my attributes was very much about helping others. And to this day, truly is that. And in order for me to be able to kind of live out that purpose, I wasn't going to be able to do that as a marine biologist.
Got it. Yeah, it makes sense. So then you get into school what were some of the things that you loved learning about? Or like, what were some of the things that you learned that you were like, oh, nobody was telling me this, and how it was beneficial to people, and like the most practical, applicable things that you learned early that got you excited?
That's actually a very interesting question. When I was very early on, you know, when I had moved in, I graduated high school early, living with my godmother. This was even before studies, before I had actually gone to college. I watched her see people and transform their lives using solely nutrition. And I thought that was really fascinating. And she was working with cancer patients. She's working with all different kinds of patients that had, you know, somewhat failed the medical system, the Western medical system, and they made marked improvements. And I knew very early on that there was something that perhaps we weren't learning, or that perhaps we weren't looking at in a way that was most efficient and effective for execution. You know, and then going to, you know, doing my undergraduate with Dr. Donald Lehman was incredibly fascinating, because you know, things really started to come together. And I would be lying if I said that it didn't, I didn't have a knack for it. I didn't have, I mean, I do, I have a knack for chemistry and biology and the sciences. And I think that there's a certain amount of ease at which I was able to learn it.
Now, your godmother must have been a real pioneer. What?
She still is. Yeah, she still is, actually.
Tell me a little bit more about her. What drove her? And just a little bit more about her. It sounds fascinating.
Yeah. So her name is Elizabeth Lipsky, Dr. Elizabeth Lipsky. And she
I've heard that name. She's written a ton of textbooks, hasn't
yes,
she?
Yes, she has. And one of her first books was Digestive Wellness. And she was actually the group before kind of the Mark Hyman group who has made functional medicine so popular. So she was kind of one of the OGs.
Yeah.
And yeah, like I said, I've been very fortunate to learn and be able to be involved in these mentors' lives.
Yeah, that's powerful. So let's go and talk about some real practical stuff for people listening. Like what are some of the things that people still believe now about nutrition that are really holding them back?
Well, you know, it's interesting because especially in the entrepreneurial space, the biggest foundational piece is nutrition, hands down, because the capacity for an individual to excel in their business and excel in just their world and bring their legacy forward is all about their highest level of functioning, right? And I would say, so my practice, I take care of a lot of the mavericks, CEOs, and, you know, a good portion of my practice is elite military operators, Navy SEALs. My husband is a SEAL, and they all have particular patterns. They all have things that they do really well at as it comes to, when it comes to nutrition and fitness. And then they all, it's remarkable. They all have a lot of the same failures. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you have to be able to leverage these failures. And, you know, we can talk about that because I'm sure your listeners fall into that high powered entrepreneurial sphere. And, you know, the nutrition piece, there's kind of two groups that I see, right? There's the group that is extremely busy speaking all the time and they eat as well as they can while they're traveling, but it's really not in an ideal space. And, you know, it's incredibly important. And so they slowly gain weight, or even if it's just a little, blood markers are off because, you know, you have to remember you're traveling, your stress is increased. So your ability to handle carbohydrates has a propensity to go down. So this is a long way of saying what is one of the practical foundational takeaways is really nailing the nutrition. And by that, I mean high quality protein. And I say it all the time, and I know that it seems cheesy, but right now there's a huge push for plant-based proteins. And that is not good advice. It's not good advice.
I've seen your social media posts on a lot of this stuff.
Yeah. And it's, you know, and I don't have a vested interest either way, but you have to understand with, you know, I've been in practice for over a decade. That's a long time. Over 15 years, I've been seeing patients.
So let me ask you a couple of questions, follow up on that. I actually just did this presentation right before our podcast here. And now I talk about mostly time and discipline and productivity. And I tell people that one of the things I learned as a personal trainer was that by, you know, a lot of people want to add more good stuff and, you know, hacks and all that stuff. But I believe that removing the negatives is far more important than adding another positive. What do you think about that general take on things when it comes to nutrition?
Oh man, absolutely. The big negatives, right, is number one for the kind of high powered pushing individual is removing alcohol, or at least really limiting it and having barriers as to how often you're going to use it, and drugs. And that drugs, it doesn't mean, you know, illicit drugs. It also means stimulants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have a lot of friends who use, Adderall and those things.
Yes, we sure, you know, we all do. And, you know, it's like the usage goes up as things get busier. It's not that, you know, kind of an entrepreneurial way is not to, like you said, take stuff away. So I think that that's very wise. It's to add more and then to do more.
Well, so let's dive deeper on the alcohol, because just Saturday officially quit drinking all alcohol for good. Yeah. And now I'm coming off drinking, like if I had 20 drinks in a year, that's a lot. And I had this one drink maximum that I followed for about 5 years. Okay. And but Bedros has seen me have more than once or twice, not a lot, but once or twice. But anyways, what I realized was, you know, I recently started wearing my Oura ring again, and one single drink. Tell us what one single drink can do to somebody and the truth about, even if somebody sleeps 8 hours, what alcohol does to your sleep.
You know, it's really interesting. So alcohol really disrupts sleep. It really disrupts deep sleep, and it really disrupts the capacity to be settled. And I'll tell you this, that if your Oura Ring is showing that you have a change in sleep, I guarantee you the next step. So if you were in my practice, the next step would do a sleep study test on you. Because I have found that the Oura Ring can miss a lot of stuff. And, you know, I do sleep studies on nearly everybody.
Oh, cool.
Because they don't actually have to be overweight. It has to do with the way that your tongue and your jaw fit. It has to do with a lot of other things other than obesity or change in female hormones, all kinds of stuff. And, you know, I would say that the entrepreneur has a knack to push through things that are hard. They may be exhausted, but they will still get up and perform at a 10 out of 10, right? I mean, I've seen it. This is my the patient population. When you limit alcohol and you can get into deep sleep, your ability to recover and your brain function exponentially increases. So, you know, I did my training. I did a fellowship at WashU in nutritional sciences and geriatrics. The geriatric part was actually really focused on brain aging and memory and cognition. And one of the things that we always have patients limit is alcohol and also electronics by their head.
Yeah.
And this is WashU. This is not, you know, this is not, you know, some kind of like hokey information or advice. This is legitimate. So I'm so glad to hear that you.
Well, I got questions now.
Yeah, but
now,
you know what? We should definitely do a sleep apnea test. And besides, you and Bedros can do it together. I would be so pumped.
Nah, that'd be fun. Because I've got a couple of things that I can't figure out. So first of all, before I get into the two quick questions, one, do you know Gianni Parisi?
I don't. Do I? It sounds very.
He's one of Dr. Phillips' students, and he spent some time at WashU. That's Washington University in St. Louis, right?
Yeah.
Okay, no, yeah. Anyways, that's an old friend. He was really into protein research and worked with Tarnopolsky as well. But okay, so you mentioned no electronics by your head.
Yeah.
If somebody has their phone in airplane mode beside them while they sleep, does that affect their sleep?
So our recommendation would be at least 4 feet away.
4 feet away.
Airplane mode or not. Yeah.
Okay. And all right. Great. I can make that change.
If you say that you are, the biggest things that I see for individuals that are really pushing hard is I see a ton of sleep apnea. If you're still waking up fatigued, the other thing that I see that actually I see a lot of intestinal parasites. And in the US, we have a very horrible way of testing. I know it sounds crazy, but we use PCR testing. They don't use these old school microscopes anymore, but that's really what is needed. So again, this, I just happened to figure this out because of my work with the military operators that come back. They're fine. They don't have any digestive problems, but their wives get sick. So if you are tired and you cannot figure out, you should at least do a parasitology test outside the US.
So what do you mean? So their wives eating here get sick, but their husbands who are eating away from America don't get sick.
Yep. So there's things that are transmitted and towels and sheets and toilets. And one partner almost always has digestive issues, and it's usually not the partner that brings it home.
Oh, I see. Got it. Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, so here's my situation is I'm not tired, but when I look at my Oura Ring, And I'm trying not, and I still eat about 2 hours before bed. So it might still be related to that, but I'm not stuffed when I go to sleep, but I'm not hungry. And I go to bed very early. So we go to bed at 8 o'clock. And
that's very early. That's even early for me who has two babies. That's early.
Yeah. So I wake up about four times before midnight, and then from midnight until four, I sleep deep. Do I need to go to sleep later?
No, I bet you need to be fitted for a mouthpiece for sleep apnea. You may be having apnea episodes that are waking you up.
Got it. And
you probably sleep in a different kind of position the first part of the night. And then the second part of the night, maybe you sleep on your stomach. And maybe you go to sleep on your back or you go to sleep on your side.
I sleep on either my left or right side because if I sleep on my back, I snore.
So that is individuals that snore should be tested for sleep apnea.
Okay. One of my friends recently put puts little bits of tape on her mouth. And she said her deep sleep has gone through the roof ever since she did that.
Right. But if you have jaw structural issues, for example, you're a mouth breather, like my husband, if he were to put tape on his mouth, he would have the worst sleep of his life.
Got it.
Because he wouldn't be able to breathe.
So am I going to have to get like a CPAP machine already?
What do you mean already? You probably just need a mouth guard that opens it and positions your jaw.
Okay. Well, no, like my mom has one and she's like, you know, 80, you know, I'm like, I don't want to be carrying that thing around.
Well, that's interesting. So that's interesting. She's probably had it for a long period of time and it can be structural. So there's a, you know, kind of that genetic component of structure.
So the first step here is do the sleep test. You have to do the sleep test.
I think everyone should have a sleep apnea test. And I think that it's completely underdiagnosed. And especially for entrepreneurs who care about high performance, if you care about high performance, you know, I think that there's a real capacity to desensitize or very desensitized to fatigue, right? I mean, like the SEALs, you look at them and you're like, nah, you're tired. But they'll be like, no, I'm good. Let's do 105,000 pushups, you know? Right? No, I'm good. And you're like, no, you look really tired. So, so sleep studies, so no alcohol, sleep study is really important. And then really nailing in your nutrition and really planning for it. So midlife weight gain really can happen. And if you know that midlife weight gain can happen, right? So you got to plan for it.
Yes.
Right. If you're not training as hard, or let's say you're going into a big push, maybe you have another book coming out, or maybe you guys have another mastermind showing up, or maybe you're prepping for.
I got a kid coming.
You do?
Yes.
You are going to call me and you're going to be like, oh my God.
What, on everything? Yes.
It depends. You're going to be tired. See, your wife might be a rock star and she'll manage all of it, you know, but you might be tired.
Yeah. I'll be tired.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So what did you do when you had your kids you're getting up in the middle of the night for months on end? How did you survive?
So I have two under two. Well, now a little bit older. So I have them very.
So this is recent.
Yeah.
You've got the most recent.
Yeah. I have an 8-month old and I have a 2-year old.
Okay.
Yep. Well, I am trained to function on very little sleep. So I would go through periods of very little sleep.
Okay.
And that's okay for me, but it's only temporary, right? So, you know, you have to be able to, if that's going to happen, that would be a time where you carbohydrate restrict, because your body, if you are sleep deprived, has less of a capacity to be able to deal with blood sugar. Your blood sugar runs higher. And, you know, we've seen those, like people that work night shifts, you will see that they have a capacity to either gain weight or have, you know, metabolic dysregulation kind of things. Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk more about what people should eat before they, you know, for dinner, so that they sleep well. Like how soon before, how much, what's the ideal for most high performers?
You know, it's interesting. I would say that it's a 24-hour period of consumption, and I tend to do a time-restricted feeding window for individuals. And especially for a lot of my high performers, I typically have them push their breakfast, or it depends on if they're training, but I have them usually eat in an 8 to 9 hour window. And that first meal and that last meal are really important. Mm-hmm. The first meal of the day should have anywhere from 30 to 50 grams of protein.
Okay.
Which is much more than what individuals would normally consume. And I'm talking about high quality, either animal-based protein or some kind of whey protein.
Okay. Do you believe that any protein bar can offer you high quality protein?
So if for a technical definition would be based on that amino acid profile, right? So
if it's got whey protein in it, then yes?
Yes, it could, but you're also missing iron, zinc, B vitamins, creatine, taurine, all these other things that come along with, say, a high quality protein, like a food matrix.
Got it.
But you could do it if you need to.
Yeah. Okay. So you've got this ideal nutrition for the high performer, but they're traveling, they're, you know, at business dinners and stuff like that. So let's say the day looks like this, that they are in meetings from 8 till 5.
Yep.
2-hour break. Then they have a business dinner from 7 goes till 9:30. You know, maybe they have to work out first thing in the morning. You know, goes till 9:30. They want to get to bed at 11. How do they optimize? Like, what's their best approach to that?
Well, they should be, you know, and I read your book, by the way, I loved it. Or you've gotten many of them, but you know, for those individuals, they need to get their training and otherwise they're not going to get it. If that's what their day looks like, they have to train and that would push their first meal back. Right. Mm-hmm. Cause they're not going to be moving much either. So that first meal is going to be optimized for protein. And I wouldn't typically add in a lot of carbohydrates at that first meal, because then they're going to be chasing hunger all day long.
Chasing hunger,
ebbs and flows of fatigue, maybe needing more stimulants, maybe needing more caffeine. So,
be like, hey, have some steak and eggs. Is that like your...
Yes. Yep. Same with dinner. You know, it depends on when they're training and how hard they're training. And then dinner would be another protein bolus, because they're probably not moving that much. You know, you've got that training session in the morning, but you know, unless they can get out and train during lunch, which would be fantastic.
Got it. Okay. So then two questions is one, what's your recommendation on caffeine intake for someone who's like, they're not really, I mean, they exercise, they're not training super hard. They're not like for me personally, I'm not training super hard. I train regularly and I'm not so overworked where, you know, I'm doing, like if I get under 7 hours of sleep, it's kind of surprising. So like someone like me, how much caffeine can I, like, I don't want to have a lot.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. So just talk, well,
yeah.
What's okay, the caffeine so, recommendation?
Okay. Well, so it depends on if you're a fast or slow metabolizer. Some people
I'm probably a slow metabolizer because I actually didn't have a coffee until 2 years ago.
Really?
Yeah.
And what happens when you had it? Were you off the wall or were you like, nah?
No. Okay. If I have a monster, then I'm a little bit too much. So I just have probably a mug of iced coffee.
So that is perfectly acceptable. You could even have two mugs of iced coffee.
Got it.
You know, where it gets concerning is, you know, I've had guys come sit in my office and they're just talking to me calmly and I go to take their pulse and their pulse is like 95.
Yeah. My heart rate is like 40 beats per minute.
Yeah.
Like people are kind of freaked out by it.
So you can handle caffeine. It sounds like you can handle caffeine.
It's just, I think if I do have the two mugs, then I get irritable, like, or I get edgy. So, so I just keep it to the one. And then, so back to that, you know, to the people who are listening, like, yeah, I have these business dinners. How the heck am I going to have just a high, you know, how do you help people get through those meals? Like, obviously you have to stand up for yourself and say, no, I'm not going to have the bananas Foster or whatever, but how do you help people through those phases so that, you know, if they do finish dinner at 9,
yeah,
they can fall asleep and have good sleep.
And I would say that one of the most important processes of someone who's really successful in the long term is they can navigate these situations, right? And plan for them. So they know it's no surprise that they're going to be going to dinner and they're going to be getting that other people around them are going to be getting desserts or they're going to be pressured to drink, right? This is predictable.
Yeah.
All the people that end up being very successful plan for this. So it's either on their program or they're not. It's kind of a non-negotiable. They plan for it. If they know that they're going to their favorite restaurant or, you know, whatever it is, it's totally accounted for, because those dinners and those parties are not just a one-time thing.
Yeah.
They are all the time. People are typically entertaining and traveling all the time. And that definitely adds up on the body.
Yeah.
You know, the most successful individuals I see are able to plan for their weaknesses. They know them extremely well, whether it's a drive for more stimulants or a drive or just, they all know where they're going to try to cut corners or where they're going to try to do something. They all know it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, the thing with the alcohol is like somebody, once I told a bunch of people that I was going to stop, they said, you know, it's better to be 100% in than 99% in.
I agree.
Because the, you know, the temptation is just too much. You may as well just quit. Yeah. So that was an interesting insight. I will miss my one drink once in a while, but
I'm curious, where would you say that you struggle with your health and wellness aside from sleep? So I think that we've solved your sleep. We're going to do a sleep test on you and it's going to come back that you have early on in the night that you don't, you know, that maybe your positioning is off and then we have to get you a mouth guard. Is there anything else that you say that you struggle with or that you see individuals struggle with?
Well, I mean, individuals struggle with a lot of things. What do I struggle with is I tend, you know, when it comes back to like the protein side of things, I just, You know, I don't mind eating meat, but I don't, I'm not like, you know, a lot of my friends is like, they just want to eat it all day long. So I probably struggle to get protein intake. Like I am also, so I'm 46 and I have like 10% body fat, and I could eat a bag of jelly beans for every meal and still have 10% body fat. Right. And I just got my blood work done, and you know, the naturopath looked at it and goes like, are you 21 years old? Because like everything's, you know, really, really great. So because of that, I know that I can kind of get away with murder, and I don't necessarily eat as well as I should. So I probably need to eat more and eat more protein, but I just don't necessarily have the drive for it.
Well, you know, it's interesting. It's probably the most important thing that you can do. And I'll tell you why, and Stu would agree with me, is that muscle changes as you age, and it becomes more insulin resistant, and it also becomes less sensitive and efficient of sensing protein. So what ultimately happens is, and I'm sure you've seen older people, they get, you know, skinnier and their muscles decrease. And even if their body fat doesn't change, you see them kind of shrink. And that is, you know, a sarcopenic change that happens now in your 40s.
Yeah.
So for you, you know, you have to begin to see, you know, if you could prioritize protein and in that jelly bean bag, just, I don't know, throw a couple eggs, but it's really, really important because.
You mean Cadbury chocolate covered eggs.
Yeah. 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 Because the trajectory of that tissue changes and it becomes very difficult to get it back.
Got it. Yeah. I'm starting to realize that now. So let's talk about something. I don't know if you're legally allowed to talk about this, but you know, HRT, you know, so the, like, what's your opinion on what men should be using it and when they should be using it?
So I do HRT in my clinic. I think that it's very, very valuable. And there's also, I believe, a lot less stigma around hormone replacement. And hormone replacement is not just for men. Women have low testosterone, women have low progesterone, they have low estrogen. Same, you know, same with men. I mean, I think that supplementation and treatment is extremely valuable because it changes their quality of life. You know, the one thing is, and you know, it really depends on the person. For guys, I will tell you, I tend to try to sway them not to start it very young. Because once you start it, people really struggle to go off it because they just don't feel as well.
Well, yeah, when they go off it, like,
yeah.
You and I know a few people together that, you know, they just can't go off it.
Right. So there's that. And so once you start it, it is a bit of a commitment, of course. But then again, if you're young and you have low testosterone, maybe you've had head trauma, maybe you jumped out of a few too many planes or got into a bad car accident or a motorcycle accident, you know, it can change the access. It can change your capacity to produce hormones. So treatment is very safe as long as it is done well.
Got it. So I think I'm going to share my screen right now because it is my recent blood work. And I was really surprised that, and maybe it's just the measure of testosterone that we did. So down at the bottom there, it shows my testosterone. And it was just total testosterone, I guess. I was really surprised that it was that high considering, like, people look at me and go, you're a pretty skinny guy. Like, you're not super
muscular. That's great. Look at that. Yeah.
What were you going to say?
You're fasting insulin. That's interesting.
I know. And it's like, you know, I'm the jelly bean man, but, anyways, I'm not actually jelly bean man. I don't eat a lot of junk, but, I just kind of tease. But, so I thought, like, if you and I were having this conversation a year ago, I would have said, I'm worried about, two things. One, my testosterone levels and two, my fertility. And so I would have thought, you know, we didn't try to have a kid until recently. And I think it was like the first time it worked. So I was really like shocked. And so if you look at my numbers here, like, would there be any reason for me to do HRT?
No. And again, it's also not just a blood draw. It also depends on how you feel. It depends on your sex drive. It depends on your erections. It depends on all those things, your energy.
I think like if you, you know, go back to that question you asked before, like, what are the things that I'm concerned about? is nagging injuries. Like, it's like, you know, stuff that you can work around, but like, you know, I had a back muscle injury last year, and then, you know, my knees, I had to go on like this very big foam rolling kick for the last couple months to get problems in my knees. And, you know, I got a 46 year old body that has played a lot of sports. And so it's like, how can I avoid those things? Which, when I talk to some of my friends who do use HRT, they're like, yeah, man, those things are gone when you use it.
You know, it depends on what kind of HRT we're talking about, right? And, you know, I don't necessarily think that pushing things to super physiologic levels long-term is a great strategy. But now there's other things that can be used that are different than what we would consider HRT, something like peptides. So BPC-157 or TB-500, and using those in conjunction for healing. And those are both, you can use BPC orally. I prefer, for example, for you would be an injectable. I would put you on an injectable program. And that can be very helpful. You know, a lot of people do use growth hormone. The reality, though, with growth hormone is that, you know, in order for it to be prescribed well and legally, you have to fail a stim test. And those are very cumbersome to do. So
it's a stim test.
It's a stim test to actually show that you have growth hormone deficiency.
Oh.
Most physicians, you know, don't do that.
Yeah.
And so that can be a little tricky.
Got it.
But then there's analogs like CJC and apomorlin, things of that nature.
Okay. The other thing, now that I'm starting to think, like, what else would I be concerned about? You know, you go back to 2020, COVID comes around, and, you know, people who pay attention to things realize, like, hey, vitamin D is super important.
Yeah.
So I'm in California now, but I, you know, up until a month ago, we lived in Canada. So Canada, not a lot of sunshine. I lived originally in Toronto, moved up to Vancouver where you get a little bit more sunshine. So I thought during COVID, like, man, I got to go and like pump up my vitamin D. According to the notes that I got, you know, so if I go back and open up that document.
So just again, curious, where in California?
I'm in Huntington Beach right now.
Okay.
I'm in Surf City.
Cool. Very cool.
Yeah. And we're actually moving to Mexico.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. So we're moving to Mexico in a month from now, if all goes according to plan.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah. So I'll get plenty of vitamin D down there. So, So my vitamin D here, I thought it would have been low. Does that look like that's in the middle? He says, like, my naturopath said, hey, you know, we can still take some oral vitamin D.
I think you're good. You're totally sufficient. Yeah. I mean, that's
so.
And then if you look above that too, your C-reactive protein, which is an inflammatory marker, is low. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So, for people who are listening though, and they're like, well, vitamin D, why is that important? How do I improve it? You know, I live in, you know, even in Ottawa, what a horrible place. And now I got, you know, rickets because I don't get any sunshine. What can they do?
I mean, I think vitamin D supplementation in a liposomal form is amazing. And I prefer liposomal because of the way in which it's absorbed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people have GI issues, and there's some individuals. And also if an individual is heavy, it takes a bit more vitamin D to be able to get into the bloodstream. It's just interesting in terms of penetration.
Got it. Okay. So then let's go back to high quality protein.
Yeah.
Just a couple, you know, so people listening go like, okay, so I remember just a quick note, like when I was a personal trainer in the 1990s at university, and there was this first year medical student came to me and he said, are carbohydrates protein? So this is a guy in medical school, just showing you how little doctors know about nutrition. So people listening to this go, well, what the heck is amino acids and all that sort of stuff? So just as quickly and simply as you possibly can, what are the high quality protein sources, and why aren't vegetarian sources and vegan sources like Impossible Foods actually quality protein?
Yeah. So when you think about high quality protein, you really think, you know, and protein is actually more complex than carbohydrates or fat, because protein, you're dealing with 20 to 21 amino acids. So it's a much more complex structure. Protein is obviously made of these amino acids, and these amino acids are what determine the quality of the protein, in particular from the diet, right? You have to ingest them. And I'll just give you an example. High quality protein has high amounts of the branched chain amino acids, which, you know, probably from your training days, leucine, isoleucine, and valine, really, you know, that those are kind of what you're looking for. If you wanted to get that in plant-based proteins are notoriously low in the branched chains. So you're looking at 6 cups of quinoa to equal 1 small chicken breast.
Wow.
Based on the amino acid profile. But everybody says, but quinoa, I get my protein from quinoa. Well, you don't actually get your protein from, you know, you don't actually get your protein from quinoa. Or you do, but the metabolic devastation that would happen with your 6 cups of quinoa is totally outside the realm of what you would consider. And really understanding, and I think more than ever now, it's very confusing for people because there's this huge plant-based push. And it becomes very detrimental because it saturates the market with confusion. Mm-hmm. Because there's a bit of narrative to take animal products out for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And it is very narrative based. I'll give you an example of that narrative. It would be, well, we should stop eating red meat because it's bad for the environment. Right. Well, actually, greenhouse gas in the US is 80% industry, transportation, and electricity. 9% of all greenhouse gas would be from agriculture, all of agriculture.
Wow.
So these are all just, you know, and when things are repeated often enough, then we believe them to be true.
Yeah. Yeah. Sound bites so, like that.
Yeah.
I grew up on a farm. I grew up on a beef cattle farm. So
you know yeah. that there's a regenerative nature and it's a life cycle. It's not just this, you know, once one thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So man, this has been a lot of fun. Now let's do a little bit of a shift here. I know we're running out of time. So you started working with Special Forces. Was this before you met your husband or after?
Yeah. And actually Special Operations. So Special Force. And I actually work with some of the Canadian assaulters.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. They don't get a lot of press.
Yeah.
So, you started working with them. Mm-hmm. And what are some of the high performance lessons that we can take with special operations people that you see in other entrepreneurs, like high performing entrepreneurs in a positive way, and that everybody listening should like consider looking into?
So that's a pretty big question. I'll tell you. Yeah. So that's like kind of loaded. I think the thing that makes them great is also the thing that actually deteriorates their health. I would say that the special operations community and the real high performers have a unnatural capacity to deal with pain. They are able to deal with a tremendous amount of discomfort and put that discomfort into a normalized bucket. Across the board, all of them. So that's
like Dave Goggins.
Yeah. Yeah. Like they all have that capacity. And I would say the ones that really do profoundly well are the ones that know their own internal battle rhythms. So they know that there's a push and like a release lever.
Have you ever worked with like someone in special forces in operations who's like, you know, they're older than everybody else. They're like the Chris Chelios, who's like playing hot in the NHL until he's like 42 or 44, or Tom mm-hmm. Brady, like, you know, the Tom Brady of special operations, like some guy who's just outlasted. What was the secret of that person?
You know, it's funny to say this, but meditation, they're really cognitively aware. They're really, really cognitively aware.
Huh.
They believe
self-respection and introspection, and they know themselves.
Yes. And so deeply in the bodies, so deep, I would say those individuals are probably some of the most spiritual individuals I know.
Wow.
And I bet you didn't expect me to say that about a commander SEAL.
No, and they not
have
at
this,
all.
Yeah. And they have this capacity to kind of integrate their mind, right? They have such good control of their mind that they also integrate that control into physical healing.
Huh. So that's a lot, because like to think that, you know, you can then control your own physical healing. What are some of the things, like, I'm sure everybody listening to this is dealing with some type of thing where they'd like to have better physical healing. What are some of the things that, you know, most people have no idea can actually help?
Right. Well, you know, I will tell you some of the older SEALs that have gotten injured, you know, say either from a gunshot or from just a lot of injuries, like you were talking about, is they sit and they connect internally in a very quiet way and put all that energy into healing and what that would feel like. And I know it sounds crazy, but more than one special operations individual in a very high position, they do this. And I don't think that they talk about it with each other. And it's a lot of awareness. It's a lot of intention. They're very intentional.
Yeah. Well, you know, even I haven't had COVID that I know of. And the people that I talk to, so I've talked to like hundreds of people, not hundreds of people, dozens of people that have had it. And, you know, I see like the people who go through a real rough bout, don't take time, don't let the body repair, you know, are running around all over the place. And the people who are like, I just stopped everything and recovered. And yeah, like they, you know, there's other factors involved too, but it seems like just stop, let the body do its job. Those people end up ahead.
I would agree. I would agree. And there's also, you know, they don't grip it. They don't like, oh my God. And there's some story around it. Typically yeah, the people yeah. that excel, there's no story. And I would say that I really had that moment when I had a former SEAL. He was actually active duty at the time, was transitioning out because he was on home on friendly soil and he was riding his motorcycle and he'd been in the teams for 20 years, was riding his motorcycle. And a 17-year-old girl texting and driving takes him out.
Wow.
And he loses his leg. He like loses his leg on front, you know, home. And he was going 5 miles an hour on this bike, you know, and I go to him, I'm like, you know, and he came into my office because he was still having residual pain from losing his leg, you know, and I'm like, you know, how are you, Brian, how are you feeling? And he's like, what do you mean? I'm tired and, you know, like my leg hurts. I'm like, no. How are you really feeling? And he looks at me totally cross-eyed. And he's like, doc, what are you talking about? What do you mean? I'm like, Brian, here you are. You're like this big, tough dude, just stud. He came home here and some 17-year-old takes you out. And I tell him this whole story. And he's like, yeah, that was like 6 months ago. Right?
Yeah. And it was like
that. But it was at that moment, I thought to myself, wow, you know, the guys that really excel, they don't, there's no narrative around it. There's no story.
Yeah.
You know, and it was probably, you know, it's longer than 6 months, but it didn't even come into his awareness that I was asking about how he emotionally felt about the fact that he lost his leg.
Yeah. There's no victim culture to it.
There's nothing, but he was like, what are you talking about, lady? So, you know, it was at that moment that I realized that the people that really stay well and really excel in all aspects of health and life, right? So health is, you know, it's interesting that the attribute is very innate to them in terms of just not kind of wallowing in it. And that translates to what I see in business, because, you know, I think as a physician, if you're a good physician, you know your patients really well. You know them really, really well. You really care about them. It's not just about their numbers. It's truly about who they are and what they're going through. And you see patterns of individuals. They let you in their life, you know? And so that's the biggest thing.
That's amazing. Now, speaking of mindset, you go in to school. You're super excited about nutrition. You're going to get a PhD, but you're also an entrepreneur. Tell me about the mindset that you had to have that got you into being a successful entrepreneur, because, you know, certainly,
yeah,
you know, a female PhD entrepreneur.
Yeah, I'm actually a physician.
Physician.
So this is interesting. As a physician, I did 7 years of professional nutrition training.
Wow.
7 professional years. And 2 of that was a postdoc at Washington University. And that's different than the 7 years post medical school. So I would say, you know, for me, I really do want to change the world. I really have this perception of medicine and realization that we've been focusing on the wrong tissue. We've been focusing on the wrong conversation. Everyone is drowning in this obesity conversation. That's not the problem. That's a symptomology of the root cause, and the root cause is muscle. And muscle is an organ, just like the thyroid's an organ. And I believe so much in this mission. And I know that there's a way to exponentially help people if people can understand this concept, that it can change the trajectory of what everyone's doing. You know, Alzheimer's is a muscle disease. And I don't know if you've ever known anyone with Alzheimer's.
When I went to McMaster, I had a gerontology class and I had to do volunteer work. And
brutal.
And so I was, you know, did a couple hours a week and I just wheel people around in the gerontology department who had Alzheimer's, and you're like, oh, that sucks.
So what if you knew that that was preventable and you knew that midlife obesity is really a risk factor and will make that much more likely for individuals? That's actually where I came up with the concept of muscle-centric medicine, is that, you know, midlife obesity is later life dementia. It's type 3 diabetes of the brain. And it all stems from muscle first. Muscle is the metabolic regulator. So we've just been missing the whole conversation and doing it very poorly. And that's how I became so entrepreneurial, because, you know, I think that some of us inherently have the belief that there is a way where we can do things better. And from a medical perspective, I truly believe that we can do things better. And so,
the way that you're going to change it is not through the medical profession. It's through being an entrepreneur.
It's through education. It's through educating others and being able to educate others that change the world. You know, part of my practice are individuals that change the world.
Yeah.
And by taking the best care of them and them experience a different kind of medicine, then my hope is that they can go out and be the best version of themselves, you know, and I will educate other physicians practitioners. Yeah.
So before we wrap up here, I know you got to jet off. One big lesson that you would tell everybody, you know, we've talked to, maybe it's about the high quality protein or something like that.
Yeah.
Here's one action step that people can take to improve their muscle centric health.
Yeah.
And then tell us a little bit about your programs, where people can find you, all the good stuff.
Well, I mean, I think it's pretty simply, if you just increasing your dietary protein, despite what you're hearing in the media, we're not over consuming protein. It's not bad for your bones. It's not bad for your kidneys. In fact, it's essential for all these things, despite what you're hearing. That is the single best piece of advice I could give someone who's interested in their health and wellness. Where can you find me? Well, you can find me on Instagram. I'm pretty active, and that's Dr. Gabrielle Lyon. I have a website, which is going through a whole rebrand, but I will tell you that I have a great newsletter that I curate, put interesting studies, interviews, like this interview will be on there, and just things that I'm involved in that comes out once a week. And then I have a YouTube where I do a lot of education with my mentor and other physicians and experts. Stu agreed to do it.
Super cool.
Yeah. Where we have really interesting conversations. I have a PhD from Princeton on there. We're working on some things as I develop the training for other physicians in these philosophies.
That's fantastic. What is your Instagram is Dr.
Gabrielle Lyon. Yep.
And Lyon, you know, with a Y.
Lyon. And, you know, there's a patient application portal. If people are interested in becoming a patient, we do have word of mouth referral is always the best. So if you know someone who is a patient in the practice, that's always the best.
And your YouTube channel
is Dr. Gabrielle Lyon.
Perfect. Awesome, man. This was so much fun. And it was so cool that we have some friends in common, like Dr. Stu and Bedros, of course. Thank you so much for your time. This has been wonderful. Yeah. It was great to get some free advice. Yeah. I'm going to go and get my sleep test done and fix that.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thank you.